Day 130, GC Standard 306. Arrival. Rosemary rubbed the bridge of her nose as she accepted a cup of water from the wall dispenser. The lingering edges of the sedatives made her head feel foggy, and so far, the stims that were supposed to counter those effects had done nothing but make her heart race. Her body longed for a stretch, but she couldn't undo the safety harness while the pod was in motion, and the pod didn't have enough room for anything except standing up and walking out anyway. She leaned her head back with a groan. It had been nearly 3 days since the D-pod launched. Solar days, she reminded herself, not standard days. She needed to get used to making the distinction. Longer days, longer years. But she had more pressing things to focus on than differences in calendars. She was groggy, hungry, cramped, and in all her 23 years, solar, not standard, she could not remember ever needing to pee quite so badly. The brusque Aeluan attendant at the spaceport had told her the sedatives would suppress that need, but nothing had been said about how she would feel once they wore off. Rosemary imagined the lengthy letter of complaint her mother might write after such a trip. She tried to imagine the circumstances in which her mother would travel by D-pod at all. She couldn't even picture her mother setting foot within a public spaceport. Rosemary had been surprised to find herself in such a place. The dingy waiting area, the twitching pixel posters, the stale smells of algae gunk and cleaning fluid. Despite the exoskeletons and tentacles milling around her, she had felt like the alien there. That was the thing that had hammered home just how far from Sol she was, the menagerie of sapients standing alongside her in the ticket line. Her home world was fairly cosmopolitan, but aside from the occasional diplomat or corporate representative, Mars didn't seem much in the way of non-human travelers. A terraformed rock inhabited by one of the GC's least influential species was hardly a destination of choice. Professor Selim had warned her that studying the concepts behind interspecies relations was vastly different from having to go out there and talk to other sapients. But she hadn't truly understood that advice until she found herself surrounded by clunky biosuits and feet that didn't need shoes. She'd even been nervous speaking to the Harmagian behind the ticket counter. She knew that her hand toe was excellent, for a human anyway, but this was no longer the safe, controlled environment of the university language lab. No one would gently correct her mistakes or forgive her for an unwitting social transgression. She was on her own now, and in order to keep credits in her account and a bed beneath her back, she had to do the job she had assured Captain Santoso she could do. No pressure or anything. Not for the first time, a cold fist appeared deep within her stomach. Never in her life had she worried about credits or having a place to go home to, but with the last of her savings running thin and her bridges burned behind her, there was no margin for error. The price of a fresh start was having no one to fall back on. Please, she thought, please don't screw this up. We are beginning our approach, Rosemary, chirped the D-pod's computer. Do you require anything else before I begin docking procedures? A bathroom and a sandwich, said Rosemary. Sorry, Rosemary, I had difficulty processing that. Could you please repeat your request? I don't require anything. Okay, Rosemary, I will now open the outer shutters. You may wish to close your eyes in order to adjust to any external light sources. Rosemary dutifully shut her eyes as the shutters whirred open, but her eyelids remained dark. She opened her eyes to find that the only significant source of light was coming from within the pod. As she had expected, there was nothing beyond the window but empty space and tiny stars, out in the open. She wondered how thick the pod's hull was. The pod swung up, and Rosemary shielded her eyes from a sudden burst of light, pouring out of the windows of the ugliest ship she'd ever seen. It was blocky and angular, with the exception of a bulging dome that stuck out from the back like a warped spine. This was not a ship designed for fussy commercial passengers. There was nothing sleek or inspiring about it. It was bigger than a transport ship, smaller than a cargo carrier. The lack of wings indicated that this was a ship that had been built out in space, a ship that would never enter an atmosphere. The underside of the vessel held a massive, complex machine, metallic and sharp, with rows of tooth-like ridges angled towards a thin, protracted spire. She didn't know much about ships, but from the mismatched colors of the outer hull, it looked as though whole sections had been cobbled together, perhaps originating from other vessels. A patchwork ship. The only reassuring thing about it was that it looked sturdy. This was a ship that could take, and had taken, a few knocks. Though the ships she was used to traveling in were far easier on the eye, knowing that there would be a solid, stocky hull between her and all that empty space was heartening. Wayfarer, this is Depot 36A, requesting permission to dock, said the computer. Depot 36A, this is the Wayfarer, replied a female voice with an Exodon accent. Rosemary noted the softness of the vowels, the pronunciation that was a little too polished. An AI. Please confirm passenger identification. Acknowledged, Wayfarer. Transmitting passenger details now. There was a brief pause. Confirmed, Depod 36A. You are cleared to dock. The Depod moved alongside the Wayfarer, like some sort of aquatic animal swimming up to suckle at its mother. The hatch at the back of the pod slipped into the Wayfarer's sunken docking port. Rosemary could hear the mechanical sound of catches connecting. There was a hiss of air as the seal expanded. The hatch door slid upwards. Rosemary moaned as she stood. Her muscles felt as if they would splinter. She collected her duffel bag and satchel from the luggage rack and limped forwards. There was a slight gravitational discrepancy between the pod and the Wayfarer, enough to make her stomach lurch as she crossed the seam between the two. The feeling only lasted a few seconds, but combined with her foggy head, jittery pulse, and aching bladder, it was enough to make Rosemary cross the line from uncomfortable to vaguely miserable. She hoped her new bed was soft. She stepped into a small decontamination chamber, empty except for a glowing yellow panel affixed to a waist-high stand. The AI spoke through a vox on the wall. Hello, I'm pretty sure I know who you are, but can you swipe your wrist patch over the panel so I can be sure? Rosemary pulled her sleeve back, exposing her wrist wrap, a woven bracelet that protected the small dermal patch embedded within the skin of her inner right wrist. There was a lot of data stored in that thumbnail-sized piece of tech. Her ID file, her bank account details, and a medical interface used to communicate with the half-million or so immubots that patrolled her bloodstream. Like all GC citizens, Rosemary got her first patch during childhood. For humans, the standard age was 5. But the patch she had now was only a few 10 days old. The seam of skin surrounding it was still shiny and tender. The new patch had cost almost half of her savings, which seemed exorbitant, but she had hardly been in a position to argue. She held her wrist over the yellow panel. There was a soft pulse of light. A twinge of adrenaline ran alongside the stims. What if something had gone wrong with the patch, and they pulled her old file instead? What if they saw her name and put two and two together? Would it matter to people out here? Would it matter that she'd done nothing wrong? Would they turn away from her, just as her friends had? Would they put her back on the pod and send her crawling back to Mars, back to a name she didn't want and a mess she hadn't? The pad blinked a friendly green. Rosemary exhaled and scoffed at herself for being nervous at all. The new patch had worked just fine ever since it was installed. She'd had no trouble confirming her identity or making payments at any stops along the way. It was unlikely that the patch scanner on this clunky tunneling ship would have picked up any discrepancies that the high-end scanners at the spaceports hadn't. Even so, this was the last hurdle to clear. Now all she had to worry about was whether or not she'd be good at her job. "Well, there you are, Rosemary Harper," said the AI. "My name is Lovelace, and I serve as the ship's communication interface. I suppose in that regard, we have relatively similar job, don't we? You liaise on behalf of the crew, I liaise on behalf of the ship."
"I guess that's true," Rosemary said, a little unsure of herself. She didn't have much experience with sentient AIs. The ones back home were all bland and utilitarian. The university library had an AI named Oracle, but she had been a more academic sort. Rosemary had never spoken to an AI as personable as Lovelace.
"Should I call you Rosemary?" Lovelace asked. "Or do you have a nickname?"
"Rosemary is fine."
"Okay, Rosemary. You can call me Lovey, if you like. Everyone else does. Feels good to be off that pod, doesn't it?"
"You have no idea."
"True, but then you don't know how good it feels to have your memory banks recalibrated."
Rosemary considered this. "You're right. I don't."
"Rosemary, I have to be honest with you. The reason I've kept you chatting for this long is so that you don't get bored while I scan you for contaminants. One of our crew members has very specific health needs, and I have to do a more thorough scan than some ships require. It shouldn't be much longer."
Rosemary hadn't felt that she'd been waiting long at all, but she had no idea what qualified as a lengthy amount of time to an AI.
"Take all the time you need. Is that all the luggage you have?"
"Yes," Rosemary said. In fact, she was carrying everything that she owned. That is, everything she hadn't sold off. She was still marveling at the fact that she could fit it all into two little bags. After a life in her parents' enormous home, full of furniture and knick-knacks and rarities, the knowledge that she didn't need anything more than what she could carry gave her a remarkable sense of freedom.
"If you put your bags into that cargo elevator to your right, I can move them to the upper crew deck for you. You can pick them up whenever you head to your room."
"Thanks," Rosemary said.
She pulled open the hinged metal door on the wall, set her bags into the corresponding compartment, and latched the door shut. There was a rushing sound within the wall.
"Okay, Rosemary. I just finished my scan. Hate to say it, but you do have a few blacklisted bugs in your system."
"What kind of bugs?" Rosemary asked. She thought back with dread to the spaceport's smudged handrails and sticky seats. 3 10-days since she'd left Mars, and already she'd picked up some alien plague.
"Oh, nothing that would affect you. But they are things our navigator can't handle. You'll need to have our doctor update your immubots accordingly before you leave the ship again. For now, I'm going to have to give you a decontamination flash. Is that okay?"
Lovey sounded apologetic, and for good reason.
The only good thing about a decontamination flash was that it was over quickly.
"Okay," Rosemary said, gritting her teeth.
"Hang in there," Lovey said, flashing in 3, 2, 1. Harsh orange light filled the room. Rosemary could feel it move right through her. A cold sting cut through her pores, her teeth, the roots of her eyelashes. For a brief moment, she knew where all her capillaries were.
"Oh, I'm so sorry," Lovey said as the flash ended. "I hate having to do that. You look sick."
Rosemary exhaled, trying to shake off the needle-like twinges.
"It's not your fault," she said. "I wasn't feeling very well to start."
She paused, realizing that she was trying to make an AI feel better. It was a silly concept, but something about Lovey's demeanor made any other response feel a bit rude. Could AIs even take offense? Rosemary wasn't sure.
"I hope you're feeling better soon. I know there's dinner planned for you, but I'm sure you can get some rest right after that. Now, I've kept you long enough. You're free to go on through, and may I be the first to say, welcome aboard."
The Vox switched off. Rosemary pressed her hand against the door panel. The inner airlock door spun open to reveal a pale man with a sour face. He changed his expression as Rosemary stepped forward. It was the most insincere smile she had ever seen.
"Welcome to the Wayfarer," the man said, extending his hand. "Artis Corbin, algaeist."
"Nice to meet you, Mr. Corbin. I'm Rosemary Harper." Rosemary shook his hand. His grip was limp, his skin clammy. She was glad to let go.
"Just Corbin is fine."
He cleared his throat.
He
nodded towards the opposite wall. There was a door painted with a human symbol for bathroom. Rosemary ran for it. She came back out a few minutes later in a more positive mood. Her heart was still fluttering, her head still clearing, the lingering tingle of the flash still making her teeth hurt, but at least one of her physical complaints could be checked off the list.
"Depods are the worst way to travel," Corbin said. "They run on scrub fuel, you know, bunch of accidents waiting to happen. They really should be better regulated."
Rosemary tried to think up a response, but before she could, Corbin said,
"This way!"
She followed him down the corridor. The Wayfarer wasn't any fancier inside than it was outside, but the mismatched corridors had a humble charm. Small windows broke up the walls at regular intervals. The wall panels themselves were held together with bolts and screws of varying shapes. Like the exterior, the walls were different colors, coppery brown to one side, dull brass to the other, the occasional sheet of soft gray thrown in for good measure.
"Interesting design," said Rosemary.
Corbin scoffed. "If by interesting you mean it looks like my grandmother's quilt, then yes. The Wayfarer's an old ship. Most tunneling ships are. Incentives are provided to captains who upgrade old vessels instead of purchasing new ones. Ashby took full advantage of that. The original ship is about 35 standards old, built to last, but not built with the comfort of the crew in mind. Ashby added bigger quarters, more storage space, water showers, those kind of things. All salvaged, of course. Don't have the money to kit it all out from scratch."
Rosemary was relieved at the mention of improved living conditions. She had been bracing herself for the possibility of tiny bunks and Santa dust showers. "I assume that Lovey was a later addition as well?"
"Yes. Ashby purchased her, but she's Jenk's pet."
Corbin continued on without explanation. He nodded at the wall.
"There are voxes in every room and in major junctions. No matter where you are, Lovey can hear your requests and transmit messages on your behalf. They broadcast to the whole ship, so be selective about what you say. Voxes are a tool, not a toy. Fire extinguishers are available throughout the ship as well. Kizzy can send you a map of their locations. Exosuit lockers are in the docking hatch, the crew deck, and the cargo bay. Escape pods are available on all decks. We also have a shuttle that is accessible through the cargo bay. If you see those emergency panels on the wall light up, head for a suit, a pod, or the shuttle, whichever's closest."
The corridor split in two up ahead. He pointed to the left.
"Med bay is that way. It's nothing state-of-the-art, but it's enough to keep someone alive until we get to port."
"I see," said Rosemary. She tried not to read too much into the fact that the only things Corbin had mentioned were related to emergencies or injuries. Loud, jovial voices came from a junction up ahead. There was a clang as something fell to the floor. This was followed by a brief argument, then laughter. Corbin's eyes narrowed, as if warding off a headache.
"I believe you're about to meet our techs," he said.
They rounded the corner to find a bird's nest of wires and cables strewn about the floor. There was no order or sense to any of it, not that Rosemary could see. Algae tubes poured like innards from an open wall panel. Working within the wall itself were two people, a man and a woman, both human. Or were they? There was no question about the woman, who was somewhere on the cusp between her 20s and 30s. Her black hair was tied back in a lopsided bun, held together with a frayed, faded ribbon. She wore an orange jumpsuit smudged with grease and gunk, patched on the elbows with bright fabric and big stitches. There were hasty notes handwritten on her sleeves, things like, "Check 32B, old wires,
And don't forget air filters, you dummy. And eat.
Perched upon her flat nose was a set of curious optical lenses. Rather than just one lens per eye, there were no fewer than half a dozen attachments welded onto hinged supports. Some bulged and magnified, others flickered with tiny digital panels. They appeared to be handmade. As for the woman herself, her dark olive skin looked as if it had spent a lot of time bathing in natural sunlight, but her indistinct features were undeniably Exodan. Rosemary thought it likely that she had grown up on an extrasolar colony, out of the sun, as they would say back on Mars. The man, on the other hand, was not so easily categorized. Though he looked human in most respects, his blended facial features, his body shape, his limbs and digits, they were all familiar. His copper coloring was even quite similar to Rosemary's, though several shades darker. But while his head was an average size, the rest of him was small as a child. He was stocky, too, as if his limbs had filled out while refusing to lengthen. He was small enough to fit atop the woman's shoulders, which was exactly where he was standing. As if his physique were not noteworthy enough, he had gone to great lengths to decorate himself. The sides of his head were shaved, and a tuft of curls popped up atop his scalp. His ears were adorned with constellations of piercings, his arms sleeved in colorful tattoos. Rosemary did her best not to stare. She concluded that he was indeed human, but he had to be a gene tweak. It was the only explanation she could think of. But then again, why would anyone go to that much trouble to make himself small? The woman looked up from her work.
"Oh, hooray!" she said. "Jenks, get off me! We have to be sociable!"
The small man, who had been operating some noisy tool within the wall, turned his head and lifted up his safety goggles.
"Aha!" he said, climbing down. "The newbie approaches!"
Before Rosemary could have any say in the matter, the woman stood up, removed her gloves, and wrapped Rosemary in an enormous hug.
"Welcome home," she pulled back, wearing an infectious grin. "I'm Kizzy Shao, mech tech."
"Rosemary Harper." She tried not to appear too startled. "And thank you."
Kizzy's grin grew wider. "Oh, I love your accent! You Martians always sound so smooth." "I'm the Comtech," the man said, cleaning the gunk from his hands with a rag. "Jenks."
"Is that your given name or your family name?" Rosemary asked.
Jenks shrugged. "Whichever."
He reached out to shake her hand. Even with his small hands, he had a better grip than Corbin.
"Nice to meet you."
"Nice to meet you too, Mr. Jenks."
"Mr. Jenks, I like that." He turned his head. "Hey, Lovey, patch me through to everybody, please."
A nearby vox switched on.
"Attention, all hands," Jenks said in a pompous voice. "As per our clerk's example, I will now only respond to my full title of Mr. Jenks. That is all."
Corbin leaned toward Rosemary and lowered his voice. "That's not what the voxes are for."
"So," said Kizzy, "was your trip okay?"
"I've had better," said Rosemary. "Though I'm here in one piece, so I guess I can't complain."
"Complain all you want," Jenks said.
He pulled a worn metal tin from his pocket.
"D-pods are a shit way to get around. And I know they're the only way to get you here fast, but those things are dangerous as hell. Stims make you shaky?"
Rosemary nodded.
"Ugh, yeah. Trust me, you'll feel better after you get some food in you."
"Have you been to your room yet?" Kizzy asked.
"I made the curtains, but if you don't like the fabric, just say so, and I'll tear 'em right down."
"I haven't been there yet," Rosemary said, "but I've been admiring the rest of your handiwork so far. Must not be easy adding on to an old model."
Kizzy's face lit up like a glow bulb. "No, but see, that's why it's so fun. It's like a puzzle, figuring out what kind of circuits the old ones will talk to, adding new bits to make things more homey, staying on top of all the old framework secrets so we don't blow up." She gave a contented sigh. "It's the best job ever. Have you seen the fishbowl yet?"
"The what? Sorry?"
"The fishbowl,"
Kizzy beamed.
"Just wait. It's the bestest.
Corbin's peering eyes snapped to the Comtex.
Jenks, you cannot be serious.
Jenks' metal tin was full of red reed. He had stuffed a hefty pinch of it into a small, curved pipe and was now lighting it with a welding tool.
What?
He said, his voice muffled through clenched teeth. He sucked air into the pipe, causing the shredded fibers to spark and smoke. The faint scent of burnt cinnamon and ash hit Rosemary's nose. She thought of her father, who was always puffing the stuff as he worked. She pushed the unwanted reminder of family aside. Corbin placed a hand over his nose and mouth.
If you want to fill your lungs with toxins, fine, but do it in your quarters.
Calm down, said Jenks. This is that tweaked strain the Laru cooked up. Bless their 8-valved hearts. All the mellow of fresh red reed without any of the toxic stuff. 100% good for you. Well, not bad for you anyway. You should try some. It'd do wonders for your mood.
He exhaled a stream of smoke in Corbin's direction. Corbin's face tightened, but he seemed reluctant to press the issue further. Rosemary got the impression that for all his bluster about the rules, Corbin didn't actually have any authority over the techs.
Does Ashby know about this mess?
Corbin asked, gesturing at the floor.
Relax, Grumpy, Kizzy said. It'll all be fixed and put away by dinner time.
Dinner is in half an hour,
Corbin said. Kizzy's hands went to the top of her head. She grimaced dramatically.
Oh no, for cereals? I thought dinner was at 18.
It's 17:30 now.
Balls,
Kizzy said, driving back into the wall. We'll talk later, Rosemary. I've got work to do. Jenks, get on my shoulders. Buddy, post haste.
Hup,
Jenks said, placing the pipe between his teeth and climbing up. Corbin continued down the corridor without another word.
It was nice meeting you,
Rosemary said, hurrying after Corbin.
Nice meeting you too,
called Kizzy.
Ah, shit, Jenks! You got ash in my mouth!
There was a sound of spitting and a twin set of laughter.
It's a wonder we're not all dead,
Corbin said to no one. He said nothing else as they continued down the corridor. Rosemary had deduced that small talk was not his forte. As uncomfortable as the silence was, she felt it best not to break it. The corridor curved inwards, connecting to the other side of the ship. At the apex of the curve was a door.
This is the control room, Corbin said. Navigation and tunneling controls. You won't have much need for this room.
Is it all right to see it anyway? Just to get my bearings?
Corbin hesitated.
Our pilot is probably working in there now. We shouldn't disturb...
The door opened, and a female Andrisk stepped out.
I thought I heard a new voice, she said.
Her accent was husky around the edges, but it was the clearest Rosemary had ever heard from her species. Not that Rosemary had much experience with Andrisks. As one of the Galactic Commons' 3 founding species, they were a familiar sight throughout the galaxy, or so Rosemary had been told. The Andrisk standing before her was the first that she had ever spoken to directly. Her mind raced, scrambling to remember what she could of Andrisk culture. Complicated family structures, virtually no concept of personal space, physically affectionate, promiscuous. She mentally slapped herself for that. It was a stereotype, one that every human knew whether they wanted to or not, and it smacked of ethnocentrism. They don't pair up like we do, she chided herself. It's not the same thing. Somewhere in her head, Professor Selim was frowning at her. The very fact that we use the term cold-blooded as a synonym for heartless should tell you something about the innate bias we primates hold against reptiles, she pictured him saying. Do not judge other species by your own social norms. Determined to do her professor proud, Rosemary braced herself for some of that Andrisk cheek-nuzzling she'd heard about, or perhaps another unexpected hug. However this person wanted to greet her, she was going to flow with it. She was part of a multi-species crew now, and she was going to be graceful about it, damn it. But to Rosemary's disappointment, all the Andrisk woman did was extend one of her clawed hands, initiating a handshake.
"You must be Rosemary," she said warmly. "I'm Sissix."
Rosemary wrapped her fingers round Sissix's scaled palm as best she could. Their hands did not fit well together, but they made the best of it. Sissix was too alien for Rosemary to label her as beautiful, but striking. Yes, that was a better word. She stood a head taller than Rosemary, and her body was lithe and lean. Moss-green scales sheathed her body from the top of her head to the tip of her tail, fading into a paler shade over her belly. She had a smooth face, no nose or lips or ears to speak of, just holes for breathing and holes for hearing, and a small slit of a mouth. A multicolored shock of feathers covered her head like a short, festive mane. Her chest was as flat as a human man's, but the contrast between her thin waist and her muscular, saurian thighs gave the illusion of feminine hips, though Rosemary knew that impression also stemmed from cultural bias. Male Andrisks were built exactly the same as females, only smaller. Her legs were slightly bowed, as if poised to spring, and her fingers and toes were capped with thick, blunt claws. Each claw was painted with lazy swirls of gold and looked to be filed down. She wore a pair of loose, low-slung trousers and a vest held together with one button. Rosemary recalled Professor Selim saying that Andrisks only wore clothes to make other species feel more comfortable. Between the clothes, the accent, and the handshake, Rosemary got the impression that Sissix had been around humans a long time. Sissix had not been the only thing to exit the control room. A waft of hot, dry air had followed her out the door. Rosemary could feel waves of heat emanating from the room beyond. Even at the doorway, it felt smothering. Corbin's eyes narrowed.
"You do know that interface panels start to warp if they get too hot."
Sissix flicked her yellow eyes towards the pale man.
"Thank you, Corbin. I've only been living on ships for my entire adult life, so I have no idea how to safely manage internal temperature settings."
"I think this ship is hot enough, as it is."
"If anyone else had been working in there with me, I would have cranked it down. Honestly, what is the problem?"
"The problem, Sissix, is that..."
"Stop." Sissix raised a palm. She looked back and forth between Corbin and Rosemary.
"Why are you showing her around?"
Corbin clenched his jaw.
"Ashby asked me to. It's no trouble."
His words were non-committal, but Rosemary could hear the same insincerity that had masked his face when she stepped through the airlock. The cold fist reappeared in her stomach. 10 minutes on the ship, and already somebody didn't like her. Fantastic.
"Right,"
Sissix said. She squinted, as if trying to figure something out.
"I'd be happy to take over as tour guide if you have other things to do."
Corbin pressed his lips together.
"I don't mean to be rude, Rosemary, but I do have some salinity tests that should be started sooner rather than later."
"Great," said Sissix, putting her hand on Rosemary's shoulder. "Have fun with your algae."
It was nice meeting you," Rosemary said as Sissix led her away. Corbin was already disappearing down the corridor. The whole exchange had been bewildering, but Rosemary was glad of what appeared to be more friendly company. She did her best not to stare at the way Sissix's bare feet flexed, the way her feathers bounced as she walked. Everything about the way she moved was fascinating.
"Rosemary, on behalf of the crew of the Wayfarer, I would like to apologize," Sissix said. "Coming into a new home deserves a better welcome than anything Artis Corbin can give. I'm sure you know all about the escape pods by now, and nothing about who we are and what we do."
Rosemary laughed despite herself.
"How did you know?"
Because I have to live with that man, Sissek said, as you do. But fortunately, you get to live with the rest of us, too. And I think we're pretty likable.
She stopped beside a metal staircase that stretched both up through the ceiling and down through the floor.
Have you seen your room yet?
No.
Sissek rolled her eyes. Come on,
she said, walking up the stairs, doing her best to keep her tail out of Rosemary's face.
I always feel better on a new ship once I know where my place is.
The Ambrisk woman was right. Rosemary's place, it turned out, was a room tucked into the corner of the topmost deck. The only furniture was a boxy apparatus built right into the far wall, which housed drawers, a tiny closet, and a nook just big enough for a bunk. But the sparseness of the room had been softened by a few human touches, or sapient touches, Rosemary supposed. The bunk was covered with a fuzzy blanket and a heap of colorful pillows, transforming what might have been a Spartan shelf into a cozy little nest. The curtains that Kizzy had mentioned were made from a flower pattern fabric. No, not flowers. Jellyfish. The print was a bit too busy for Rosemary's taste, but she was sure it would grow on her. On the adjoining wall, there was a small hydroponic planter, trailing tear-shaped leaves. Beside it was a mirror, upon which hung a printed note, "Welcome home." It was the smallest, simplest, humblest living space Rosemary had ever seen, dingy spaceboard hotels notwithstanding. And yet, all things considered, it was perfect. She couldn't think of a better place to start over.